CITR 101.9 FM's third annual Access Day. My name is Estefania Solis, and we are broadcasting live from Vancouver on the unceded ancestral territory of the Hukaminam speaking Musqueam people. Now, today, we're going to be airing a project that DP Leal and myself have been working on the past year. It's called Breaking the Barrier, Highlighting Different Abilities in the Employment World. Now, this is a project which looks at employment in a whole new perspective by bringing in inclusion and equal opportunities for people with disabilities. We specifically focus on organizations within British Columbia that are trying to remove barriers and discrimination when it comes to hiring people with diverse abilities. We focus on such organizations like Pacific Autism Family Network, Richmond Center for Disability, BC Partners in Workforce Innovation, and more. These profit and non-for-profit organizations give us a small glimpse into a bigger picture on how these employment services are determined to take away the stigma and the taboo of how every individual, every human being deserves a chance to shine and earn a living. So, we truly hope that you enjoy this story. Keep an open mind and bring this awareness to the forefront in the world that we live in today, where equal rights are shifting and arising, rising.
So you're looking for a job?
Yes, I am.
Well, tell me, what can you do?
Well, I can...
Tell you what, let's check and see what kinds of jobs we have right now. I'm sure we can find a job that's right for you.
Thank you.
Here's a job for a secretary. Can you type?
No, I can't.
This school is looking for a teacher. Can you teach?
Sorry, I can't.
Here's one for a painter.
No, definitely not. I can't paint.
This company is looking for a truck driver.
I can't drive a truck.
This place needs a dancer.
I can't dance.
Here's one for a writer.
I can't write. This is terrible. I can't believe this. I can't bake. I can't drive a bus. I can't cook. I can't type. I can't teach. I can't paint. I can't drive a truck. I can't dance. I can't write. I can't do anything.
The job can change all that. The job can mean independence, security, relationships. And if a driver's license is the equivalent of a summa cum laude from MIT, a job would be like a Nobel Prize. And when it comes to getting a job, people with disabilities die a death of a thousand cuts. I know that as a parent, I know it as an employee. And the unkindest cut of all, the belief by 99.9% of us that people with disabilities really can't do the job as well. That hiring a person with a disability is a great thing to do if you can afford it. This is about all those people who want to work, who can work, but aren't allowed to because of our attitudes and these invisible walls that we've built around our business. This is about justice.
As a little kid, I wanted to be a transit driver. Kelly Rayburn here. I do a show called The Community Living Show that is broadcast every Thursday mornings from 9 to 10 o'clock on Co-op Radio, and of course Fridays from 2 to 2:30 at CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM. Basically, they're all on the National Campus and Community Radio Association networks, so that's what I do. I do help out with the people with disability and special needs.
That's interesting. You mentioned that on Thursdays, Community Living Show, is that on CITR or is it on Co-op?
Community Living Show airs both stations. One is at Thursdays from 9 o'clock till 10 on CITR 101.9 FM. That's our full hour show. We repeat it again on Fridays from 2 o'clock to 2:30, the half hour show. So basically we wanted to do it as a weekly show.
How did you get involved with CITR and co-op?
Originally, the Community Living Show used to be called the Self-Advocacy Show. So a lot of the issues were affected on the disability in the community.
But how did you get involved? Like, did they come up to you, or did you guys knew each other? Like, how did you get in?
I got in for Co-op Radio just to see if they wanted some info and stuff. I mean, from now I can look back at it because I've been working with Co-op Radio for 5 years, five or more years now, and all I can say is that they needed more people, and a friend of mine who has, he and I have been listening to Co-op Radio at the time, said maybe you should try and get involved in it. So get involved with the issues on disability, and thought, okay, I'll give it a try, and the rest they say is history. So
awesome. Thanks for letting us know all that. Before we set our recording, you mentioned that you work for Access TV. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. Access Television is a monthly show here in the Vancouver community television station on Shaw on Channel 4. How I got involved in it was over about a year ago. Originally, when I started doing Co-op Radio, most of the Co-op Radio crew were doing both radio and television. I started about a year ago. Okay, so community television started back when Rogers Communication Group was around, and I started about a year ago. First, I was a camera operator, and I helped out with the people's movements and stuff. Originally, I used to operate a camera at one time, and I used to do a show called Adventures on Transit with one of my friends, but we never got a chance to get it published. I do have the archives of the DVDs that I do have on it, but it tells you and it gives you the information on public transit around Greater Vancouver through trolley buses. You can reach us on the Community Living Show through email, communityliving.radio@gmail.com. That's our email account. That's the Community Living Show side. On the Late Night Show, you can email me at CITRLateNightShow@gmail.com. Past shows, you can check out CITR.ca.
Kelly, we really appreciate you coming out and allowing us to, Stephanie and I, to interview you. And we hope our listeners do check out your shows. So thank you, Kelly.
It's my pleasure, DB. It's been wonderful having
you. Thank you so much.
Truck!
What do you choose? Or abilities? Limitations or abilities?
So thanks, Karen, for meeting with Stephanie and I. Can you please introduce yourself? Tell us who you are and what you do.
My name is Kiran Lay, and I am an independent consultant in accessibility and inclusion. And one of my contracts for 20 hours a week is working with Spectrum Society for Community Living. And I'm doing employment connecting. So I work with the job seekers to find their role in the community.
How did you get involved in this line of work?
I've always been in this line of work. I guess I have a lived experience of having a disability. They're always in this field of work as a recipient, and then I volunteered for this adaptive recreation. My background is in recreation, and I worked with several non-profit organizations doing recreation work, like disabled sailing, disabled skiing, adaptive hiking, and being outside is my absolute passion in life, and seeing the organizations like figuring out how to make this accessible for someone who doesn't walk, climb up the mountains is what I like to do. So I've been doing that, and then I went back to do my master's at UBC, trying to figure out what's the meaning of inclusion. Can we really, when we say welcome all abilities, what does that actually mean? And can we actually do that as a community? And though I had a lot of struggle with that, me personally and me professionally, and then after my master's, I didn't get any clear answers. But anyways, after my master's, I got into working with municipalities, doing community education around accessibility and inclusion. And that's when 2010 Olympics were happening, though a lot of different funding opportunities were around to help communities increase accessibility. And then slowly I made, it wasn't until 7 years ago when I found the job posting for employment and helping people with employment. And so I worked for PC Center for Ability, and they had a program called Abilities in Mind, where they actually worked with employers, not on the people with disability side, but with employers to educate them on how to build an accessible and inclusive workplace.
Why do you think it is important to work in this field?
Everyone needs to be valued in society. I think everyone has their ability in their own way. And, you know, it's, everyone's got talent, and that if we value people, they'll contribute to community, whether it's their volunteering, paid work, whatever, or just being around the community. And I think they add value to the community, whether it's being more welcoming, being more patient, being more understanding, being more accepting. It's not an accessibility. It's about treating humankind, humanity, and valuing humanity. I work with many job seekers right now that in many different ways, whether it's curious about what field they go into or maybe what type of post-secondary education they need to do. Or maybe I have some people who just want to come in for the practice interviews, and there's some people, two people that I know that have just come in totally nervous. I make it a point to not ask them too much about their disability. What I'm here to do is support you in your journey. In today's world, I think we underestimate volunteering. This lady that I helped the volunteer work at the Vancouver Aquarium, and she's been working there since May, and she loves going there every Thursday, and I went to visit her a few times, and she's so determined in doing her chef that no one can talk to her. She just does it, she cleans tables, she's help, people, because Vancouver Aquarium got a very complex garbage disposal, you know, and it's cool to see the way how she connects with other people. The more we connect with people, the better it normalizes disability, the more comfortable people become. It goes down to how we value people.
What if someone has a physical disability? Would you give any suggestions, or is that something that you wouldn't do? And that's something an employee of a workplace would look into.
I'll give them tests. I'll give them some recommendation, like, so maybe someone with a physical disability may need a bigger keyboard or whatever. So maybe it's partnering up with assistive technology of BC or Neil Squire Foundation.
I want to go back and talk about a little what you mentioned earlier in your past jobs, was that when people meant inclusion, it wasn't necessarily inclusive. Inclusion should be about choice.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know your thoughts on that, and maybe you can explain a little bit more of what that means.
I think we all, if we value people, then we believe that everyone needs the choice. And I think, I mean, I don't, there's so many programs and there's so many things that say, oh, come to this event. We welcome all abilities. We welcome this. But I hesitate whether they can really accommodate people with an extreme significant disability. Not every program will fit everyone. I think within the disability field, there's so often a preconceived notion that you have to go in the adaptive program or the disabled program, whereas you designated to go there, you're not really choosing. And if we value people, then we have to ask them. I think if you allow your weakness to shine, then it will break the walls, make you more human. We all got weakness.
What do you choose? Limitations or abilities?
Hey, hi, Louisa. Thanks for a meeting with myself and Stephania. And my first question is, can you tell our listeners who you are and what your role is?
Hi, my name's Louisa Bridgman, and I am the Community Connector for North and West Vancouver for Connectra. And Connectra is part of the Disability Foundation, which was started by our ex-mayor and now MLA, Sam Sullivan.
Hi, Louisa. My name is Estefania. And the second question that we have for you is, you mentioned that you're a Community Connector for Connectra. And we would like our listeners to know, as well as ourselves, if you could explain to us what a community connector is.
A community connector's role is to help find people with disabilities, physical disabilities, who want to find employment or want to find recreational activities in our areas. There are six of us right now. And we are scattered all around North and West Vancouver. Is myself. There's a connector in North, in Surrey, in Vancouver, so Tri-Cities. And we help people with disabilities who have questions about employment or recreation or even other issues, to help them get the resources that they need.
So as a community connector, how do you feel you have contributed to connecting people with disabilities?
Well, in the last 4 years, we've had a pilot project to help with employment, and also now with this year, it's the first year that we've actually had the EMSP project, which is an employment project much like our pilot project was, but the difference is we have a research component. And to actually see disabled people find out that they are actually employable and to reach their dreams and reach their potential, that's actually the most amazing part of the position, because we are the network between, I feel, the network between WorkBC and the actual participant who is looking for employment or looking for some sort of other resource.
Why did you decide to get into this field of work? Not only for yourself, but also for your team.
I've always known as a small child that I wanted to be some sort of advocate for people with disabilities or people that are having, that have some sort of issues. And 4 years ago, this job kind of landed in my lap. I was recovering from surgery, and I had actually been approached by the Disability Foundation to come and interview because I had done a couple spots for them to promote some recreational services that they provide. And I came in for the interview, and that's how it started with the pilot project.
What things do you look for when conducting this job search process for someone that comes into Connectra?
For the EMSP project, which is our brand new project, they have to be a person with a physical disability from the ages of 19 to 64. They have to have a willingness to want to work and a drive to want to work. And they have to live within one of those six cities that I described before, which are Vancouver, Surrey, New West Burnaby, Tri-Cities, and North and West Vancouver. They have to be within one of those locations, and to be part of the EMSP project, which is Employment Support Mentorship Program. In order to be part of that project, they have to want a willingness to work, and they have to sign a confidentiality and a consent form just to give the research department at UBC access to ask them questions and to use the data that they gather over the next 3 years. We match our clients with a volunteer and have that one-on-one interaction to assist them to find the employment which is more beneficial, which works better.
So in this involvement for 8 months, what happens after this process of meeting the mentor, quote-unquote, session is done?
The community connector and the volunteer, which we call the mentor, and the client will meet up. UBC will meet with them before then, the client themselves or the participant themselves, and they'll have a series of questions and a series of goals that they want to achieve. And then I will match them up with volunteer or a mentor. It'll be like a coffee date just to introduce them, to get them comfortable with each other. And then my involvement with that one-on-one partnership is done. If the mentor needs any resources and stuff like that, yes, they can come back to me. But after I do the initial like introduction, I have to step away and be hands off, because if I'm actually involved any more than that, it's tampering with the research, because we want to see how the mentor interacts with the participant. And every 2 weeks, the mentor will give me a physical update on the progress of what their initial goals were and the progress of like reaching their first, second, or third goal. And then I will send that off to the researchers and also to my bosses to let them know. And so that's my involvement.
How do you make sure to go out and recruit and create these opportunities for the people that are looking to be mentored?
A lot of the process that we do is some people use social media to find the volunteers and also the participants. A lot of what we do is face-to-face, or we go to different organizations and tell them about the project and say, is there any way possible that we can share your database of clients, or do you know of any clients that you have that might be interested in employment?
Are there any positive or memorable stories you can share with us on how Connectra Society has made a difference in the lives of people with disabilities?
One of the big memorable things that I will always take away from, you know, being part of the old project and also being part of the new project is that this organization and the Disability Foundation were started by Sam Sullivan, who ended up disabled because of an injury, and he wanted a way to give back to his community. And so then he created this organization where there's six different, he created this nonprofit foundation where there's six different organizations, and Connectra happens to be one of them. And I think that is something that's like really memorable for the project the project and also the organization, is that he was the one that started it. So the Disability Foundation not only has the EMSP project, which is the employment side, they also have disabled hiking, disabled sailing, adapted music programs, gardening, and lots of different things that, you know, wouldn't be available to people with disabilities if it wasn't for people like Sam. The EMSP project itself just recently started, but I was part of the original pilot project, which happened 3.5 years ago. So we're going into our fourth year of the employment support.
What was the factor that motivated the original research?
Well, the reason we got the funding for the second round of this project, which includes the research, is because of our results from the pilot project. We worked with roughly 207 participants and over 100 volunteers, and I think we got anywhere from 5 to 10% of those people working either part-time or full-time. That's just a rough estimate. So the provincial government were like, okay, we want to refund this program, but the only way we'll be willing to fund it is if there's a research component, right? And in order to keep programs like this going, they need the research to see that it's beneficial.
I was wondering, if people wanted to get involved, how would they be able to contact someone?
All of our contacts are on the Disability Foundation website, which you can find at disabilityfoundation.org.
Do you want to say anything to our listeners?
Only thing that's possible is if you try, and anything's possible these days. And like places like Connectra and the EMSP project are a good stepping stone to helping you find out what you want to do in life.
What do you choose to see? Limitations or abilities? Limitations or abilities?
My name is Louise Gaudry, and I am the Career Resource Coordinator here at the Center under our SIL program, Supports for Independent Living. Mm-hmm. And the SIL program is comprised of two streams. One, resources for career development, which, as the name implies, is very much career-focused. And then secondly, the resources for community participation was born out of the fact that not everyone who came to see us was necessarily job ready.
Mm-hmm.
So they may be individuals that have a bit more of a community participation goal. Mm-hmm. Perhaps they want to look at getting involved with recreation or volunteering that would in turn develop employment skills, but not actually ready to be putting their resume out.
Right.
Okay. In the employed sense of the word.
Okay. What made you want to become a career resource coordinator at RCE?
Well, my interest possibly working in employment actually began as I was coming to the end of my prior employment. Mm-hmm. I had worked for 15 years at the then called BC Paraplegic Association, now SCIBC, doing intake information and referral. And so like we all do when we are going to be out of work, we're starting to think, well, what are my transferable skills and what is a new direction that I could go in? Mm-hmm. And for me, I thought that employment would be a good direction, and indeed it has been. I am passionate in my conviction that employment indeed will be the great equalizer for persons with disabilities. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And how long have you been in this position?
I have been in this role and now in my sixth year, although this is the first year under the SIL project. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, we had a ops fund contract through the federal government, and that was at that point specifically the Resources for Career Development project.
What services can Richmond Center for Disability, or RCD for short, provide for people with disabilities?
We have a wide range of services that reflect the wide population that we serve. Mm-hmm. One of the strengths of the center is that we are not disability specific. Mm-hmm. So if there's a service that we can provide that suits you, whatever your particular disability is, we're happy to do so. So with our cross-disability focus, we have individuals that have mobility issues, learning challenges, mental health disabilities, the whole gamut. And in keeping with the philosophy of the center, everyone is welcome in any particular class or program, regardless of your disability.
What specific goals and outcomes does the skills development and empowerment services offer?
As I mentioned, we serve a very diverse population. So, for example, my colleague, Dina McInnes, looks after things like the Life Skills Program, which teaches basic life skills, mm-hmm. such as money management, cooking, personal care, mm-hmm. To individuals with disabilities. Then my colleague Viet, who is a coordinator of IL programs in general for the center, he is also our computer guru and and offers various programs. We also have recreation programs. For example, our singing club is very popular, games club. And then individually is my colleague Ian, who oversees our job club program as well. So we're very, very diverse and things are always changing. The thing to do is contact the center, depending on what you're sort of expressing an interest in. Our reception will direct you to the appropriate coordinator, be that Viet because of computer or Dina because of life skills. If you say employment, for sure it's going to come to me. Mm-hmm. and we go from there. So we just do a basic intake, and each project will have their own documentation that they want you to complete. We do invite everyone to become a member. Mm-hmm. And the membership is just $10 and then $5 a year annually after that. So as you can see, we really don't want that to be a barrier, especially to people on lower fixed incomes.
Is there any continuing support for people with disabilities once they've done the programs? And
there isn't really a start and a finish per se. And so, for example, I have had people come to me. Then I close their file because they're employed. And then they come back to me and say, you know, I want to do something new or something has changed or this hasn't worked out. Actually, I should mention as well where the independent living comes from, and that is that we are part of IL Canada. You know, first of all, we want to provide the information that the individual may want for the choices they want to make, you know, assist with the development of skills accordingly so that they can determine the path that they want to go in. We want to empower individuals to participate in the community to the level of their choosing. And so the purpose of our programs is to equip that individual to do that.
Person comes in with a disability and does want to get employment. What are the steps or that the individual has to do to fulfill that wish?
In terms of enrolling with me, you simply need to call me up and I will look and see. I have a simple intake process. And then one of the first things we try to do if a person doesn't have any idea what they would like to do, I have some simple interest and abilities testing that I can do with them to help kind of get a direction. We work together on resume, cover letter, interview skills. And then when that piece is in place, we can actually start with active job search. I have a gentleman right now who is working in landscape. We had worked together before, and then he had left and then came back to me because he that opportunity had ended and now he was looking at a new opportunity. He came back to me and all we did really was to do his do a practice mock interview, and lo and behold, right away he was hired. So,
well, I can do lots of things, I guess.
You're listening to the special edition on Breaking the Barrier here on CITR 101.9 FM. And of course, we're streaming online at CITR.ca. This is Accessibility Day. You're tuned into CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Coast Salish Musqueam territory at the University of British Columbia. Today is CITR's third annual Access Day, which features 6 hours of special programming on accessibility, self-advocacy, social accessibility, and adaptive awareness programming, and more. Visit CITR.ca for full information and schedule to find out events on events.
Employer here we go. Story was a young man who had started to work with an employer, and the manager popped me a quick email. He said, "Can you give me a call?" Mm-hmm. I said, "Okay." I'm thinking, "Oh, what's going on here?" And so I call him. He goes, "You know what? He's a great guy, but he won't leave." I'm like, "What?" He goes, "The end of shift, he goes downstairs, he won't go home." So, okay, well, what does he do? Well, sometimes he'll get changed and go back up to work. And I'm thinking, well, this is a problem. Like, how many employers would love to have employees that would stick around and actually want to continue working? But I get it. I mean, his shift was over, he needed to go home. So, the solution to that was just tell him to go home. Have a conversation. Yeah. Explain it in really simple terms. When your shift is over, you can change and it's time to go home.
Yeah.
Problem solved.
So my first question is, can you please tell us who you are and what your role is at BC Partners in Workforce Innovation?
BC Partners in Workforce Innovation is a 3-year pilot initiative that's underway in BC. Mm-hmm. It's funded through the Ministry of Social Development and Social Innovation through their Research and Innovation Fund, R&I for short. I get to be the recruitment specialist.
Okay.
So I've got a really awesome job where I work directly with our employers. So what we do is We help employers who want to hire inclusively and want to have a diverse workforce. We help them hire talent for their organizations. Mm-hmm. So we work a bit like a recruitment search firm, mm-hmm. Which sort of goes against the traditional model of helping to connect people with disabilities to employment. The traditional model is social service agencies, yeah. starting with the person who's unemployed and then looks to see who might hire that person. Mm-hmm. We actually start with the employer who's got the job and the opportunity, and we reach out to our network of social service organizations who work with people in their employment search, or sometimes there's families now that have heard about us, and parents are contacting us, or individuals are contacting yes. us directly. Mm-hmm. So we're testing this model because it's referred to as a demand-based recruitment approach. Mm-hmm. We're testing this to see whether over the 3 years it produces greater outcomes, employment outcomes, mm-hmm. and does it work better for employers? And so far it's looking like it does. Right now we're working with about 15 employers, everyone from London Drugs. We've got a number of stores that we're recruiting for in the Lower Mainland, mm-hmm. Edgewater Casino, the new Park Vancouver, mm-hmm. CIBC. My favorite was Canucks Sports and Entertainment because I love Trevor Linden. So to be able to send a few people their way was a really fun thing. We're working with C-SPAN, another great organization, mm-hmm. BC Lottery Corporation.
Wow, those are big companies.
Taco Fino's just come on board. I'm really thrilled because they're such an awesome organization. And if any of our employers are listening, I'm sorry if I've missed you, but they're all a great group. So I get to work with them and mm-hmm. identifying what employment opportunities they have mm-hmm. and reach out to do recruitment campaigns, and I get to interview people and recommend people. It's really awesome when that match is
Sounds
there.
Sounds really fun.
It is, yeah, it is.
Does a person with a disability need any documentation to prove they do indeed have a disability?
No.
Oh, okay.
We don't require that. We're not so concerned with the diagnosis or the label. We're more... What we look for is abilities in relation to the opportunity. Mm-hmm. So we even kind of shift the language around people with diverse abilities, mm-hmm. Which for some groups that, you know, that works well, and for others are still, you know, they prefer to be recognized as having a disability, but we tend to focus on abilities in relation to the job.
Yeah.
So that's shifting some of the momentum around that.
Okay, and when it comes to employment, what guidance or programs do you offer?
In our approach, we tend to work with people who already have a passion and interest, yeah. maybe some skills, maybe some education in relation to the job that they're applying for. Mm-hmm. So if I was to make a suggestion around that, it would be if you're looking for employment, that you follow something that you're really passionate about, because it then shows, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Some positions require that post-secondary, very specialized education. Others don't. Some, you know, if we're looking at opportunities with some employers, and I think of just entry-level opportunities, it's getting tough for employers to find employees these days. Like for us in the Lower Mainland, those workforce shortages are there now. So employers are a bit more motivated to look at volunteer experience.
Yeah.
Differently today than they would have 5 years ago.
How long have you been with this?
We're in our third year of the pilot, so the pilot concludes in May 2018. Mm-hmm. It'll stop being a pilot because, you know, that piece will have a definite end date. But we're looking at, you know, what, how we operationalize this and what's next for BC when we're in those discussions now.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are the process like when approaching business or companies on employing people with diverse abilities?
Well, we were kind of in a fortunate position in that, you know, we started with 6 employers. Mm-hmm. We did a feasibility study in advance of putting forward a request for this pilot, and we looked at this as a strategic business approach. Mm-hmm. We knew that in BC there are workforce shortages now and in the future, so we did a quick feasibility study to identify what are the sectors that have the greatest need for employees mm-hmm. that are facing shortages now and in the future. And then we reached out to, you know, who are the leaders in those sectors. So organizations like London Drugs, for example, already a strong community presence and really strong family values, really strong leadership in that organization. Mm-hmm. So we involved them in the feasibility and said, basically, if we were to go ahead with this, would you be interested in being an employer partner? Mm-hmm. So we approached this not so much to go out and get businesses to hire through us, but to partner with us mm-hmm. to test this model. So we started with those organizations, and then as more and more companies heard about us, they were calling and asking if they too could be an employer partner, which is really cool.
Yeah.
So we don't have to go knock on doors.
They come to you too.
They're coming to us, and we're at a spot where we're kind of maxed out, but if a company comes to us and they're really serious about this, like they're 100% committed, not just dipping their toe into this area or just mm-hmm. sort of exploring it, we'll find a way to help them.
How do you bridge the gaps in a workplace when creating a connection for an employee who is looking to hire someone from your program?
Yeah, that's a good question.
That was from Stephanie.
Yeah, thank you. Some organizations, and this is something that we've found as a lesson learned in the pilot so mm-hmm. far, is that in some organizations, it's the CEO who's committed their organization mm-hmm. to being an inclusive company.
Yeah.
Or they've set, what I'm noticing over the past 2 years in particular, they've set a specific strategy around diversity and inclusion as mm-hmm. an organization.
Mm-hmm.
So in the case where the CEO has done it, if they have not communicated that out to all levels and all people in their organization, that accountability piece falls short.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Makes sense. You take companies like Vancity, for example, mm-hmm. they are by far, way far ahead in the province of BC. They're really leading the way.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did is not only did their board and their CEO commit that they were going to tap into this talent pool and do it in a big way,
mm-hmm.
they were going to train their managers. They spent 3 years educating staff, and I think we're just seeing some recent ads. Their recent TV advertising campaign, where you can see that it reflects their values to be not only an inclusive, not only is your business, your bank, your money welcome at Vancity, you're welcome to join them as an employee. So that piece really is important when you look at how do you bridge the gaps.
Mm-hmm.
It really does take a full-on approach.
Yeah.
When you're a small business, we actually work with this small business called Track Fleet. They've hired three drivers from us, transfer drivers, so brand new vehicles being driven to car lots for sale. Or one of the owners just said, you know what, we want to be inclusive. All we want are people who can drive vehicles, will be good with our customers,
mm-hmm.
we'll take care of the rest, right? So small company, 20 people, they're adding another 10 people. It just takes him to say, this is what we're doing, this is why, and it makes sense.
Okay. And how do you engage management in these workplaces to better understand the individual's circumstances and needs?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, because we focus on abilities in relation to the opportunity,
mm-hmm.
we present strengths of each candidate in relation to the job. We describe qualities and strengths and abilities in relation to the job. And that's what managers want to hear.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear, again, the diagnoses or what a person can't do.
Mm-hmm.
We have honest conversations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are some of the things that will bring out the best in this person? Sometimes people have very unique needs when they get on the job. But we're at a spot now where we're able to have those conversations in an honest way.
Yeah.
And I think that's come from a position of trust.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Do you follow up on the process once they are matched and begin with working for the employer? Like, what happens once they're matched?
Yeah, so we stay tuned in. Because we're a pilot, we have to kind of stay tuned in for the 3 years to see how people are doing. We would anyway when you're referring somebody to an organization. So we touch base in that first couple of days, see how things are going.
Mm-hmm.
What we try to do is set everything up for success up front, but sometimes as the reality of getting into either training or orientation, there's a little bit more that's needed. If there's any sort of bridging, say a month in, maybe things aren't working so well, mm-hmm. we can come in and have those discussions with the manager or the employee. But we also rely very heavily on our service partners. So, I mean, I'm not a specialist in working with people on the autism spectrum.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Pacific Autism Family Network is. So,
Net with them.
Yeah. So we rely heavily on the experts, the job coaches who work and really know their clients.
Mm-hmm.
Our client is the employer. There's probably never been a better time in BC to be someone with diverse abilities looking for employment opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is, really follow what you're passionate about. There's nothing worse than interviewing somebody who really doesn't want to be doing that job.
Right.
And the reality is they're not going to get the job. So mm-hmm. be passionate about what you want to do to earn an income
mm-hmm.
and go for it. And go for it.
What do you choose? Limitations or abilities? What do you choose? A limitation or ability.
So my name is Stacey Freeman,
mm-hmm.
and I currently work as the Regional Autism Manager for the Pacific Autism Family Network. I work for a federal initiative called Ready, Willing, and Able within the Pacific Autism Family Network.
Mm-hmm.
And this federal initiative basically facilitates entrepreneurship, employment, and post-secondary for individuals with autism spectrum disorder and intellectual disabilities.
Wow. That's a lot. What is the purpose of the Pacific Autism Family Network?
Sure. I have a whole bench here. So the purpose, or the core purpose, is to be a knowledge center. So ideally bringing together state-of-the-art resources and research, information, learning, assessment, treatment, and support, and building capacity to address the lifespan needs of individuals with autism spectrum disorder and related disorders. So it's intended as a network to provide services and supports across the spectrum,
mm-hmm.
which is really important, and also across all ages, since oftentimes you'll find services that might just specifically be for adults, or they might be for children, and there's sometimes a gap in between. So the idea is that it'll help reduce some of these service delivery gaps if possible. So we're working on that. It's also the first organization dedicated to knowledge creation and knowledge translation, targeting applied models that can easily be shared and disseminated to families on the ground. So we're basically going to attract a whole bunch of new thinkers and researchers to the facility.
Mm-hmm.
And these people will bring innovation, practical and effective clinical programs, which up until now have not been developed because of limited access to an environment that fosters interdisciplinary collaboration of long term.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what our purpose is in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. So is it just for the autism spectrum? Is it for anyone that has a disability that could come here?
Yeah, so the center is not specifically just for autism spectrum disorder, so that's it's also for individuals with developmental disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So you're thinking neurological disorders, or maybe someone who's Down syndrome, maybe someone with FASD. So developmental disabilities covers a lot of individuals.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
So when was the Pacific Autism Family Network established? How did it come about?
That's a good question. So there's no specific date that we've listed, because this has been a project that's been ongoing for years. So it's been a passion project.
Mm-hmm.
It was founded by Wendy Lisagar Cochia and Sergio Cochia. So it was a passion project from the two of them, because they have a child on the spectrum and they are inspired by their journey in supporting their child. And so a lot of that journey was a discovery of service gaps or a need for certain service delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And so over the years, consulting with so many different groups and so many different partners, the full plans for this network came about. So now where we are, we're in the hub.
Mm-hmm.
And the hub is where a lot of the services will be delivered in the Lower Mainland. Because the whole idea is that even if you're part of the building, you don't need a formal diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
It can be self-identification too. Some service providers might require a formal diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
but it'll depend who it is in the center delivering what service.
So for employment, how do you work? Like, how do you know
And the person actually needs
help when changing employment?
Yeah.
So the person comes to us.
Okay.
So they will, for example, they might be referred to us from an agency they're already working with. Mm-hmm. So we have lots of community partners in BC. So let's say they have someone they're working with and like they really want to be part of RWA or for this job, so we'd like to submit their application. Now they're participating in the program, right? If it's someone who has not attached to an agency, they might approach us because they don't have funding. They might not have had a diagnosis. They might not fall with any area of reasonable funding. So they'll come to us independently, and then we'd have an intake appointment with them to see where they stand. Like, are they someone that wants to do employment right away? Is it someone who is ready for employment? Like, is there something we need to work up to get them there? And so if someone really wants to just jump into employment and we send them job opportunities and they apply, that's great. If they're hesitant to apply or there's something holding them back, we might do a follow-up and say, hey, maybe here's another program to get you into the routine of employment. So maybe you might go to a site and see what it's like to be there and maybe help get rid of some of that anxiety about what it is to be employed. And so there's many ways that we can get people into employment, right? And it's gradual for some, and some it's immediate, right? So everyone's at their own stage, or everyone has their own doors that they like to open. Once again, building up those life skills. Why don't we take the elevator up to the third floor? So it's right ahead. So this is a big space. This is actually where we had the grand opening, and we had all of the different ministers kind of participate. The big movement in BC and in Canada, because we have people coming from different provinces that came for the grand opening. It really signals a change in terms of how facilities can be built to be diversity friendly. It signals a change in terms of collaboration. It signals a change in terms of the momentum, right? It's just quiet, essentially. Basically, when it's sensory deprivation, you can choose to keep the light on or you can choose to have the light off, but you don't hear anything. Like, it's meant to be absolute silence. So if you're having a breakdown, there's no one going to be stimulating you, so that way you're not around people.
Just come straight back.
Yeah.
Hey.
So, right behind us, all the artwork here is exciting. So, we came up with a self-advisory group, and the self-advisory group is made up of individuals who self-identify as being on the autism spectrum. And so we had a call out for artists, and it wasn't just in BC, it was across Canada, for anyone with a diverse ability, so developmental or autism spectrum disorder. It's what we were looking for, but we were open at one point also PAN disability. I think that came towards the end. But these are mostly, I think these are all from individuals on the spectrum. And so the self-advisory group were the ones who got to decide what went up in the space. So it wasn't picked by people for people. It was picked by individuals who self-identify, for individuals who self-identify. So that way it's not someone doing it on behalf of another person. So the self-advisory panel really liked these pieces. So all the artworks that are framed or put up, they're done by individuals on the spectrum or with a developmental disability, and picked by individuals on the spectrum. It's really great. This space here is a sharing space. So it's going to be office space for service providers to use and share. And you can see we have the boardrooms, once again, that we can use. And then the space that I like to go to is what you can see, there's a movie symbol.
Oh, cool.
So you can see that we're going to what would be a studio to possibly make films. So you got all the artwork, which is great because it's funny. The stuff that were the chosen or stuff that not necessarily I might have selected, and that's the beauty of it, right? Having a self-advisory group that really kind of says that this speaks to me.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. So, this is what I mean, like a washroom symbol, because I mean, you're like, you know exactly what it is that you're going into. Just like this has been a recent time, that's all I know I'm going into. The green screen room.
Oh yeah.
Is it already open? Okay. So if you guys come in, You can see that this will be another area where individuals can learn how to use soundboards, equipment. They can learn how to maybe do visual effects, right? So the whole idea is that there's a green screen that they can play with and do recording. If there's someone that wants to record a message to send somewhere else, they can do it here and then we can send it for them. But the whole purpose is they can learn how to edit, they can learn how to record, they can learn how to place equipment. They can learn how. It's very entrepreneurial. Mm-hmm. There's many things that we're like, we don't know how it's going to parse out, but we're going to see, right? And the reason why we're doing it that way is you can't go into a building with this idea in mind without being flexible, right?
Yeah.
So we know that this is going to be used for recording. We know it's going to be used for editing. We know we're going to train individuals here on how to work with the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know if there might be a social group at some point that uses it. We don't know if there's. At one point, we were toying with the idea of having a production company and hiring individuals, so we don't know. Like, there's so much up in the air, but it's really cool.
Well, their resume, their application is done on the camera.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right, there's so many different things you can do. I mean, we've had with some, a lot of employers don't necessarily want to see the video resumes, mm-hmm. but they might want to see a graphic resume, mm-hmm. so why not do it here? Or they might want to see that you have the skills, so now you can say, I know how to use a switchboard, I know how to use a soundboard, yeah. I know how to use editing software that you use for films or commercials,
mm-hmm.
right? So you have more to go forward with in terms of the competitive market. The back screen you can take off so you can do a white background if you want, if you just want to record it without that, but otherwise you can do the full screen, the screen, so it's exciting.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's
ever,
really
ever,
awesome.
Yeah, have you ever done anything with a green screen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So much fun. So we have people posing inside of airplanes when we open it up, so that way we could show like live how it was like when we were just there in front of a green screen. The third floor, my favorite part really is the studio. And our gift shop is only selling items by individuals with autism spectrum disorder or developmental disability.
Wow.
So it's selling their goods, the money goes back to the entrepreneur. And a little bit goes into the facility as well to make sure that we can keep some of that, those programs running,
yeah.
right? But you can see there's just a range of products. So we have shampoos and soaps. We have cards. We have your own baking kit where you make your own, I think, instant brownies. There's an artist from Edmonton that is selling his work, which is those Lego pieces,
yeah.
the brick art,
mm-hmm.
Which I absolutely love. Oops. Which I absolutely love. And then we have those conversations in a jar, and those are designed by an entrepreneur
mm-hmm.
that knows that there's a lot of social barriers for individuals
mm-hmm.
for success. So what they've done is they've created these jars with conversations on them. So you pick out the topic, and then you have to talk about that topic
for
the conversation starter. So it's really great, especially for those on the spectrum that might not know where to start with the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a little bit awkward socially, so it's fantastic. We have jewelry made by those who self-identify, and it's sold in places like London Drugs, but also here. We have one young entrepreneur, she's 15,
wow.
and she's created what you call sockies. So she's recycled socks that people don't want anymore, and she's made them into these dolls for people that need the text. The tactile touch, right? So individuals who really need the touch, and it's a different part. So this might be soft cotton, and this is beads, right?
Yeah.
So each one's different, and this one's just cotton, right? So so they're selling, that's Anika, and they're selling their pieces. So everything's different, and we always have a little piece about the artist. So for example, if they're selling paintings, we have a little bit more about the artist. We have their business cards. So if you want to have them do a piece for you, you can, right? And so
it's Rhea's artwork.
Yeah.
It's Rhea's also artwork. Did you see? It's Rhea's.
Yeah.
Oh, do you know Rhea? You did an interview with her.
So we put out the call across Canada, so we're still looking for more entrepreneurs. As you can see, there's lots of room to grow and sell stuff in here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we're really excited, especially mm-hmm. when this is opening, to see what goes and what doesn't,
yeah.
and we'll pivot from there. And that's an area that we don't typically see as tapped as much as this
mm-hmm.
entrepreneurial side.
Yeah.
And so we really want to grow that capacity
mm-hmm.
within the community of, come on entrepreneurs, we can support you, whether we sell your products or we help you get
mm-hmm.
your product off the ground.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that, that'll be part of the program too, because like I said, we have the Go Group Initiative, and that'll be to help support entrepreneurs, or through Ready Room, maybe we can support entrepreneurs. That's kind of the, this is the facility in a nutshell.
Wow.
We also have other spokes that are opening, and so we have a spoke that's just opened up in Prince George, and we'll be looking to open one in other areas too, like Kelowna. Mm-hmm. And so that way families have access to that information, that knowledge, in different regions, which is really awesome.
And is it just in BC, or is it across Canada?
So the hub is in BC, and the spokes are in BC. The intention, because we have that federal initiative that I spoke about, so that's actually across Canada. Mm-hmm. And so the way that it's delivered is with all different community partners across Canada, so in Ontario, Quebec, Alberta, you name it, Nova Scotia, and we are all working around employment, entrepreneurship, and education.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a huge outreach component to that too, because there's a lot of individuals that don't qualify for funding provincially.
Yeah.
And so typically they may not have access to a lot of services. Mm-hmm. So the initiative allows touch points for those individuals so they can enter into the competitive labor market force with maybe some supports and backing from it. So it's
okay. Good. In what ways does the Pacific Autism Family Network offer services for employment?
So I touched on one of those. It offers employment through two programs currently that are housed in the Pacific Autism Family Network.
Yeah.
The first one is the Ready, Willing, and Able Initiative, which I spoke about.
Yeah.
And then the second one is employment work. So it's kind of that pre-vocational piece. So someone's maybe not ready for employment, or maybe they are ready for employment, but they just don't know what sector they want to work in.
Mm-hmm.
They can go through the 12-week vocational or pre-vocational program and kind of do some job sampling in different environments, whether it's a hotel environment, a recording studio, it could be with a tech company, it could be just a smattering. We've had some on ranches or farms, so really just to get an idea of what they might be interested in and get feedback on mm-hmm. their performance. And so it kind of helps them determine, you know, maybe I want to work in the let's say gaming industry, or maybe I want to work in tourism, or maybe I would like to specifically look at IT and front-end development, right? Because I really love, you know, this company. I really like SAP, right? So what we're trying to do is catch the different individuals at whatever stage of employment they're at and then find something that works with them. And through the two programs, we're able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So through Ready, Willing, Able and Employment Works, we're able to help facilitate that journey for people. And some people aren't ever going to go into employment, so they might go into entrepreneurship and they want to own their own company. So we can help them with that, right? So it's pretty neat. And I should have mentioned this too, we have the Employment Club.
Oh, wow.
So that's a support. It's launched. It's running in our facility right now. And what it does is it has a lot of adults who meet who maybe self-identify as having autism spectrum disorder or related disorders.
Mm-hmm.
And some individuals who might self-identify as being neurotypical, and they all meet and talk about their challenges in employment. They kind of advocate for each other, and it's just a support network, which we find is really important in that employment journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. So where does the Pacific Autism Network see itself in regard to short-term and long-term goals within Vancouver and other communities around BC?
So I'm not sure if I can speak to the goals as a whole organization, but I can say that specifically to employment, which is where I work, The short-term goals are obviously employment for as many individuals as possible. The long-term goals are to facilitate ongoing successful employment as well as post-secondary, because we're still having a lot of barriers that exist for entry into these sectors or various sectors as well as post-secondary. And it could be something as simple as an online application tool really doesn't help a lot of individuals who might self-identify as having autism spectrum disorder, because it's a behavioral-based testing,
mm-hmm.
right? And it might not actually have anything to do with their skill set. It might not highlight that. So there's a lot of barriers that we're trying to tackle. And so short-term goal would be we want to see more business owners who have autism spectrum disorder or developmental disabilities. We want to see more individuals entering post-secondary, and we want to see more people in, you know, work, period, in all the different sectors, not just your traditional sectors.
Mm-hmm.
The long-term goals would be eliminating the stigma.
Yeah,
because there's a huge stigma for anyone who has a diverse ability. And we all have biases that we carry with us wherever we go. And so it's not to say that because someone has a bias that they're a bad person, but it's helping them understand how their bias can actually be preventing someone from being successful within an institution, helping them understand how could I work with someone who might have a diverse ability, you know, maybe understanding what is something they can say that they don't have to be afraid of saying, because a lot of people are just afraid to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the long-term goal is eliminate the stigma, create systems in place where this can be streamlined, and it doesn't have to be a case-by-case basis anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We're creating demand within this employer, where we're creating demand within this particular sector. It would just be everyone does it because they know that there's no issues hiring individuals with diverse abilities,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well said. How does PAFN hope to accomplish these goals?
Employment. Yeah, I was like, it's an ongoing thing. So part of it is building those stakeholder relationships, because we rely on the agencies that we partner with, right? So there's a lot of agencies that are doing a phenomenal job supporting the individuals. But then the other component too is developing business relationships, because it can't just be agencies connecting with businesses. It has
mm-hmm.
to be businesses who are championing inclusion and diversity, and then bringing other businesses on board. Because
mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, B2B conversations are really important. And the best person to advocate is the person who's experienced it firsthand in terms of how they've developed inclusivity. But there's also a component of developing consortiums and associations and having people at every level, so board level, executive level, not just human resources. We need multiple buy-ins. And that's really the way that you can do it long term. And then showing that there's nothing different with having someone with a diverse ability in the workplace. So the more individuals that are hired, the more this becomes a normal conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that, you know, managers and directors don't have any kind of qualms or hesitations around things like safety. That's something we often hear, when in fact most individuals with diverse abilities are probably some of the safest people you're going to meet, because they're even more aware of their surroundings.
Yeah.
Right? So it's just tackling some of the stigma. Yeah.
And last but not least, is there any events or new programs a PAFN would like to mention for people who could be listening?
If you go on the site, then you can definitely find a link about upcoming events.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
What compelled you to do this? How did you come about it? What compelled you to do this? How did you come about it?
It's a long road ahead, but they're finally trying to make changes to remove that barrier, that discrimination. But they all have to work together. And it's not going to happen overnight. But if they can just keep an open mind and understand the person's ability, then anything is possible. Hello everyone, I'm DP Lail, and you just listened to the Radio Doc, Breaking the Barrier, highlighting different abilities in the employment world. We would like to thank all the organizations that contributed to the project and made it possible for us to discover all the work that is currently being done to us to discover all the work that is currently being done to bring more opportunities for people with different abilities. We hope you enjoyed it.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting